Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football, and it's the season. We have a game tomorrow night. We have multiple games Thursday, and we're off and running, and we will have college football, by my estimation, every single week from tomorrow night. Actually, beginning last weekend, but, I mean, uninterrupted, constant, boom, going forward from tomorrow night through practically middle of January. So there, and then we'll be in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. That's what it is. College football season is here. Chuck Oliver Show continues on a Tuesday. Appreciate Dave Bartu joining us, as he do every Tuesday. Bottom of hour one, he's going to be here for two segments. That's every single Tuesday. Except last Tuesday, he was in Hawaii, and he said he's going elk hunting at some point. But other than that, he's here on Tuesdays. If you missed it, if you want to hear it again, if there's any interview, we had Mac Brown last week, whoever it is, thepodcastpark.com, thepodcastpark.com. Go there. You can subscribe. It just shows up wherever you want your podcast to show up. It's free, 100% off, folks. Can't do any better than that. So that's where you get it, thepodcastpark.com, or wherever you get your podcast.
Everything you need to know about college football, every single day. This is CFB 365.
Headline. Aftermath of Hurricane Ida moves Saturday's Oklahoma-Tulane game to Oklahoma. And it'll be played in Norman. It is the second game of a three-game series. This middle game was supposed to be on campus at Tulane, and that's just not going to be able to happen. There is still a shelter-in-place order for Tulane's campus. The weather moved on. We talked about that yesterday. But there's the aftermath. It's not like the clouds part, sun comes, ooh, everything just blown away. Bad weather gone, it's sunshine. No, that's not what it is. So they've got a lot of assessment going on right now around New Orleans, the campus, everything else. So the game has been moved. In fact, Tulane, the football team themselves, they went to Birmingham to practice, and they're going to stay in Birmingham practicing before traveling to Oklahoma. What is today, Tuesday? I think they're traveling. They may go a day early Thursday. So everybody has happened to be flexible, including the location of this game. The final game is supposed to happen in Norman in 2024. The two schools are going to work together to they're going to get a game in New Orleans on campus for Tulane. It's just not going to happen this year. But the schools have said that they're going to work together to get that game. The third game will be in New Orleans, but just the day of it. They may have to change the date of it. So that's what it is. Only the lower bowl of the stadium is going to be used for seating when Tulane is there on Saturday. Oklahoma was supposed to have a game, so they've got all, like, stadium maintenance and, like, when are we going to use the stadium the first time? September 11th. Okay, well, then we'll just work on it, and we'll be done by the 9th, we promise. And then yesterday they got told, hey, how close are you? Yeah, it's still the 9th. Yeah, well, we got a game Saturday at this stadium. Oh, so they're not going to use the upper part of it because there's just projects going on. Tulane will remain the home team and get the gate. So you talk about Oklahoma stepping up a little bit. So there you go, and they'll work out all that stuff. But the game has been moved, but there's more to it than just, oh, we were going to play at A, now we're going to play in B. Headline, South Carolina's start former graduate assistant at QB for opener. All of that is true, and all of it is necessary, and none of it is fully revealing. Yes, South Carolina is going to start a former quarterback who had, quote, retired and joined the coaching staff, but he was a quarterback as recently as this spring. Didn't North Dakota State play in the spring? So I think they did. So he's played. It's just that he had moved on from playing, but the magic year. And so just on headlines or general description, did you see where Carolina got their quarterback? They went to the coaching staff. Makes you think they got, you know, guy out there with his walker getting out to practice. It's not really it. It still was a guy who had given up the game and was moving on to his career as a coach, but South Carolina does have a starting quarterback, and it is really disappointing for Shane Beamer and everybody with that program because there will be no benefit going forward. You have somebody who's a stopgap, all right? He can run the offense just fine, and that's what he'll do in the probably the first two games, which is where you needed Luke Doty so much. Now, the bigger problem is why didn't somebody else stepped up? You don't have that many guys to choose from, but there's at least one more guy, Jason Brown, who word is he wasn't necessarily preparing, like conditioning-wise. What's preparing to be the starter? Because, well, I'm not going to start anyway. And now he's not going to, but he'll be the two. Headline, Hudson Card named Longhorn starting QB. Steve Sarkisian said a whole lot about this, but the short answer is Hudson Card, who was not the kid that came off the bench in the bowl game and played lights out for about two and a half quarters. That's Casey Thompson. Hudson Card will be the starter. They're going to play both. What I suspect is Sark is sort of playing the halfway game, I think. I hope. I actually hope that, and I'll talk more about that later in the program, but I want to think that Steve Sarkisian, even with imperfect choices, could choose a quarterback, and apparently he's chosen two. So consider yourself up to date. That's enough. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk more football next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
If you can get yourself back in time, even like maybe 10 years ago, maybe not even that far, I'm telling you, folks, carved in stone, 11th commandment in college football, if you took a transfer, there was an understanding on both sides. If you brought a transfer into the program, it was to start. There was no reason for you to invest your time, your resources, recruiting, you know, time and money and scholarships and everything else on a kid who might be there a year, maybe two, and he's not even going to start. Why would we do that? You wouldn't. And so you didn't. It was made crystal clear to me how broad of a change transfers on your roster, how broad of a change their impact is. Earlier this summer, I was looking at the FSU defense. It wasn't even the offense, just the defense on FSU. And I was looking at all these transfers, and the kid, Jamie Robinson from South Carolina, I was like, yeah, he's going to be a rotation guy. But he'll play, but he's a depth guy. I looked at defensive tackle. I was like, wait a minute, he's not going to start either. He's going to be a rotation guy. An outside linebacker, a corner. I was like, all of these guys, some of them may start. Some of them are just going to kind of play. That's what it is now. And the reason is because, I mean, if you're going to the transfer portal and get 12 kids and all 12 start, my gosh, what were you starting with before you hit the portal? So Auburn is the same way. They've got either 9 or 10 transfers, and they are all over the place. Some of them are starting. Some of them are backup. Some of them aren't even on the two deep. I want to welcome on right now, guy that we always love catching up with when it comes to talking Auburn. From the OA News, it is Jordan Hill. Jordan, how are you, man?
Doing great, Chuck. Just counting down the days. We're almost there at the start of the season.
Yeah, let's talk Auburn either too deep or maybe even we have to go off the too deep for maybe a couple of guys. And let's talk transfers, especially at quarterback, because this has gone according to plan, I believe. There was someone present to push Bo, but Bo is still going to be the starter. Talk about just the general feel the staff and the team has for TJ Finley at this point.
Well, I think they like what they've seen. I think that no one really expected TJ to come in and win the job, and I don't really get the feeling that that was the expectation, you know, when they added him. You know, you think about the fact that he was a true freshman last year, and because of that extra COVID year, essentially he acts as if he's a true freshman this year as far as eligibility he still yep. has. So they added him. He looked really good in the viewing periods we got to watch. He's a big guy, 6'7", 246. He looked good, you know, in the portions we got to watch. But I think so far he has done the job that was expected of him. I really do think he pushed Bo because what we saw, TJ, you know, looked like he was confident. Didn't look like it was, you know, he was somebody who had just joined the team and was behind or anything like that. But Bo looks good as well. So, you know, I get the sense that TJ has done what's been expected of him. If he had outplayed Bo, I think he very well would have been the starter, but I don't, you know, think that was the case. But I think Auburn's going to be feeling good. I think that TJ fills the role that is needed. And I think if you're Auburn, if you're Brian Harsin, you feel pretty good about your quarterback depth. I mean, I think without a guy like TJ Finley, you know, as much as Bo is willing to run, you know, you do risk potential injury.
Oh, yeah.
You got to feel better having a guy like TJ Finley compared to if it was a true freshman and Demetrius Davis, who has looked really good, but, I mean, again, is a true freshman, or even a guy like Grant Loy, who's been around, but, I mean, you know, it's not the caliber of quarterback that's going to get you through the SEC.
Talking Auburn with Jordan Hill ahead of the season opener this Saturday. Let's stay on offense because, you know, I was actually talking last week about Sean Shivers, and I said, if you look at him, he's supposed to be the change of pace, the third down guy. I was like, that ain't him. He's just a shorter. I was about to say smaller. He's a shorter Tank Bigsby, same running style. So who is that third back? Who is the guy that maybe is a little change of pace? Is that Jordan Ingram, transfer from Central Michigan?
I think it's actually going to be Jarquez Hunter, who is a true freshman and is a guy that got a lot of praise. Even going back to the summer when we were at media days, Owen Pepo was like, yeah, he's already squatting 600 pounds. So I think they've got a lot of confidence in Jarquez that even though he is a true freshman and is a guy that kind of added late, they needed a running back by the time that Harsin got hired. And all of a sudden, really, Jarquez was probably the best realistic option that had not signed in December. But he ran for a ton of yards in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Obviously, that's a place that knows something about good running backs. And he's really done well, and we got to watch him a little bit. They had an open practice on Saturday, so we got to sit and watch, and he had some good plays. He did have one fumble, but he shows, you know, why they thought he could come in and fill a significant role. And I think he's been really one of the pleasant surprises of fall camp. You know, he's not going to unseat Tank, obviously, and not Sean Shivers either. But I think he's a guy that they can count on to spell both of those guys from time to time. And we might get to see a good bit in these first two games against Akron and Alabama State, which I think can do, you know, really wonders for him as you look at the long term.
Were you referring to Marcus Dupree at all?
I was, yeah.
You're not old enough to refer to Marcus Dupree. All right, so,
okay.
So good
bad.
For you. I guess investing in a little CFB history with some 30 for 30. Good for you. Let's bounce out to the perimeter. Demetrius Robertson, a little bit late arriving. That was just an academic checking some boxes in Athens by everyone's understanding. But after he showed up, apparently he's made a pretty good impression on folks, and he's going to be the one out there. And besides run fast in a straight line, what are you hearing about Demetrius?
Well, he seems like he has really caught on to the offense, which I think was a legitimate concern because not only did he not come until fall camp started, but he was a little bit late. He had missed the first couple practices while they were getting stuff squared away. But by all understandings from, you know, what we've heard from Harsin and Bo Nix as well, they've really praised the way he's come in and worked. And you know, Harsin talked to us on Monday, and he talked about just Demetrius's study habits and what he's committed to the game. And, you know, this is a veteran guy. I mean, it seems like, you know, at this point it was 5 or 6 years ago that he was at Cal and earning some freshman All-American honors. So he's been around. And I think he's lived up to the expectation that they had of adding a veteran receiver. When you have a receiving core that is talented but this inexperienced, you know, they really needed to go out and try to find somebody. And it remains to be seen what kind of production he'll bring. But, I mean, so far it's been positive reviews, and now we'll get to see if he can kind of live up to that and be a receiver that Bo can rely on, because that's really one of the biggest questions about this entire team is who is going to kind of fill that role left by Seth Williams. I mean, Seth was Bo's guy. There's not a clear answer yet, but maybe we'll get to see that in these first few games.
Flip it around to defense and the defensive line. I mean, at least half the starters there are going to be transfers. And obviously with Newkirk out and then Tyrone Truesdale a couple of weeks into camp as well, there's some snaps available. But Tony Fair, kid came down from Birmingham, Marcus Harris from Kansas. They're going to start, as far as we know, on Tuesday, correct?
Yeah, that's what we've been told, and it does honestly kind of match what we've heard through fall camp. But Tony Fair's been a guy from UAB that when they got him, it was a big addition because they needed some help at nose tackle after Jeremiah Wright tore his ACL in the spring. And then you mentioned Truesdale wound up leaving. He resurfaced this week at Florida. But a lot of people have really talked and spoke highly of Tony Fair. I mean, he's a big guy at 330, but they felt like as big as he is, he can move. And we talked to Derek Mason, I think that was a couple of weeks ago at this point. And Tony's an older guy. I mean, he was a part of the recruiting class back in high school that Auburn got, like Kerryon Johnson, some of those guys. Tony at one point was at Indiana State, had some concussion issues and medically disqualified, and then kind of worked his way back to playing. So he's an older guy that Derek said shows you his maturity when you sit down with him. I mean, he said that Tony's kind of like a little brother to him when he's talking to him. But he's shown the experience. He's shown the athleticism to play on the defensive line. And I think that's something that has to make you feel good if you're an Auburn fan. And then Marcus Harris has been another guy that I think you would put in sort of the short list of guys that on both sides of the ball have really impressed. He looked good during his time at Kansas, as good as you can look on that Kansas defense. But he had shown flashes and had even gone with him or was still with him during spring ball and had played pretty well during their spring game. And he has gotten a lot of praise. They've talked about how versatile he is, that they can kind of move him around, move him along the defensive line. So I think he's a guy to watch. And I think the fact that he's named a starter kind of speaks to their confidence. I mean, that was something I think it might have been Chandler Wooten spoke about last week, that, you know, he basically had to prove himself. I mean, that, you know, coming from Kansas, that no one thought for sure, you know, this is a sure thing, that he had to earn it among his teammates. And by all accounts, he has. And obviously, it's wound up putting him in good position to play a significant role in this defensive line.
And for any fans, you look in the secondary, it's overrun with transfers, including two in the starting lineup, if you count the nickelback as well, Donovan Kaufman, the kid from Vanderbilt. Last thing I want to ask you about, though, and we got like 30 seconds left, just what do you think is the general approach offensively? What do you think they're going to do against an overmatched opponent offensively on Saturday?
Well, I think they'll try to get on them early. I think that they'll open the door for Tank to really, you know, push and maybe try to break some plays. But I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get some explosive plays on this Akron team. I mean, Auburn's clearly got a more talented roster, and I don't think this should be much of a dangerous opponent. But I think they'll want to show what they're capable of doing and let Bo maybe air it out some. But I see it really being a game where Tank can go off and they can get some of the other running backs involved and try to ease into week two with as little fanfare or as little attention as they can.
Yeah, a very uneventful Saturday as a kind of what I think the coaches are after. Jordan, appreciate the time as always, brother. Thanks for coming on today, man.
Always enjoy it, Chuck.
All right, again, always appreciate his time. Jordan Hill from the OA News. Talking to Auburn ahead of Saturday's home opener. I believe it's the early start, isn't it, against Akron. And Bo Nix and what they do with him is really what I'm interested in. If it's an air it out, get some confidence, make some positive things happen, or it's just get through the day and move on to the next week.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Florida opens this Saturday. Ben Hill Griffin Stadium hosting FAU. And I want to tell you that there is a big difference between saying they're a better opponent than most of us realize and they're a more dangerous opponent than most of us realize, because FAU is not a danger to Florida, I do not believe. They're a lot better than any of us are probably thinking. They've added Nikosi Perry, former Miami quarterback. They have a veteran offensive line. They can ground and pound some. We know the problems Florida had at least a year ago stopping the ground game. And FAU has, I think it's 13 their top 13 or 13 out of their top 14 tacklers from last year coming back. So they're in that first category. They're a lot better opponent than most of us are giving FAU credit for being. They're not in the second category because they're not still not going to be dangerous to Florida, but you have to show up. You have to prepare. You have to play your starters. This isn't necessarily, you know, I always say that the starters, even in a blowout, you're always going to play at least the first possession of the third quarter, and that's because the coach wants to have a regular halftime. You pull starters in the second quarter, what happens? Even the best teammate in the world, the best team leader, he's not listening. He's not paying attention, and you just set the wrong tone. So even this is not going to be one of those first possession of the third quarter, and then you just empty the benches, I don't believe. But it's going to be a chance for Dan Mullen and Emory Jones and the rest of that offense to kind of stretch things out. I want to welcome on a guy I'm going to call a good friend. I've been on his thing. He's been on my thing, and always love talking with him. From Pot Up with Matthews in the morning, it is every Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. It is Shane Matthews. Shane, how are you, brother?
I'm good, Chuck. How are you, my man?
Doing all right. I appreciate you carving out some time today. Let's talk about Florida and Saturday's opponent. Like I said, this is not just a speed bump. This is a real opponent, but it is a chance for Dan Mullen and Florida fans to see what they have on offense. How do you think it's going to look on that side of the ball for the Gators Saturday?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. They lost some really good players, obviously, in Kyle Trask and two first-round wide receivers, a tight end that we'll never see anybody like him ever again. But they have some good players. I think you're going to really see an offense, Chuck, more like when Tebow played, more run-oriented from the quarterback position, which, you know, that means the defense is going to have to account for that quarterback in the run game. When pass plays are called, that's when a lot of guys are usually running wide open. So, you know, Emory Jones has waited his turn, been very patient, played a little bit here and there, but it's his team. Anthony Richardson, the other quarterback, will probably see some time here and there. But I think Gator fans are excited to see what Emory can do.
And that's really one of my questions because, you know, Anthony Richardson, obviously from spring, you know, he's like, I'm not just giving it up. I want to earn some time. And so he wants to get on the field. But with Alabama looming in week three, I think Emory Jones needs every on-field rep he can get. How do you believe Dan Mullen's going to play this? If the Gators are able to stretch this out, do you think it's get more work for Emory or let's get Anthony in a ball game?
Well, I think Anthony's going to get in the game. I just think if you go back and look at how Dan has coached quarterbacks, he's always played that backup a little bit in most games. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, I mean, even last year, you know, Emory got some time. The previous year, Emory got some time. So he wants that backup quarterback to have a little bit of experience. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, Emory hadn't played a whole lot of football. And it's crazy nowadays. So many fan bases worry about who the backup quarterback is. You know, back when we played, you throw the starter out there and he plays as long as he possibly can. If the game gets out of hand, then you put the backup in. But I think teams are so concerned now with injury or what have you, COVID, who knows what could happen.
Transfers.
They want to keep everybody happy. That's pretty much what it is.
If we look at the running back room, last year I realized it was a lot easier because I was like, well, Damian kind of does this and Malik does that, and then the third kid, he does something completely different. What about this year? Because there's not three kids. There's not just Naquan. There's like six kids in the backfield now, and a couple of them are five stars that weren't really there last year in the mix. So how do you think that ball gets passed around, because they still only let you play one of them?
Yeah, I don't know how you keep everybody happy, Chuck. The depth chart came out, and those really mean nothing, but your two five-stars weren't even on the depth chart.
Yeah.
You know they're going to play, but as you mentioned, they have a lot of good players in that room. And the two five-stars, Florida really hadn't had a five-star running back in quite some time. So Lingard and Bowman, I'm sure they're going to get plenty of carries, plenty of touches. You know, there's a lot of talk with Naquan Wright and Malik Davis. They kind of can line up in the slot and play a little bit of receiver. Maybe I don't want to compare them to Percy at all, because that's not fair. But they have some skills out of the backfield. But I'm with you. I don't know how you keep everybody happy.
Wrapping up with Shane Matthews, folks, get him on Twitter at Matthews Morning. It's Pod Up with Matthews in the Morning. It is a Monday through Friday podcast hosted by Shane Matthews. All right, well, let's talk a little bit about receivers. Jacob Copeland, I know he's the one. He's the lead dog. He's, you know, third and eight. Where's Jacob? But what role will he be playing? How do you see – is he going to line up everywhere? Is he sort of the Kadarius role this year?
Could be. You know, he's extremely talented, has a little bit of experience in the last couple of years. You know, in my opinion, the best overall top-to-bottom receiver that Florida has is Trent Whittemore, guy that kind of flies under the radar. He's supposed to be starting in the slot, a local Gainesville kid. He's 6'3", 6'4", can jump out of the gym, very reliable, catches everything, knows where to go, can block. Not a guy that's going to wow you, but just gets the job done. But they also have Justin Shorter, who's a big he almost looks like a Kyle Pitts type guy with a body. So they have some guys that people may not have heard of. But, again, these guys aren't going to be having the ball thrown to them as much as when Kyle Trask was the quarterback. This is going to be a totally different offense, and I think people need to go back to when Dan Mullen was calling plays back in 2008, 2007, right around there.
If we can flip it around to defense, last thing I want to ask you about is I think I know what FAU wants to do on Saturday, and that's kind of muscle up and try to move the ball on the ground. Will Florida be better stopping the run in 21 than they were in 20? And I'm not trying to be a wiseacre. They almost have to be. It's their worst run defense, I think, since 71.
It was bad, Chuck, and I was really concerned watching a couple of scrimmages at this time last year. I thought our defensive line was undersized, not SEC caliber. And I was really concerned about our interior guys. Well, I guess they were concerned, too, our coaching staff, because they went out and we just got three transfers, some big dudes, to fill the middle, one from Penn State and two from Auburn, which we got one, I think, like yesterday, and he's going to be playing Saturday.
Yep.
So college football has become the National Football League, where you pick up a guy off waivers and you play him the next week. So, but I agree with you. Defensively, Florida will be much better, I think, with the addition of those three big guys.
Well, Shane, always appreciate the time, brother. When y'all have had me on, it's always been a lot of fun. Man, look forward to talking to you throughout the season, okay?
Anytime, Chuck. Football's here, thank goodness.
Oh, no lying about that. It is Shane Matthews again from Pod Up with Matthews in the Morning.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon background screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.
Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
First game with a new staff, new players. You know, we got some transfers in. We got freshmen in, added to our older guys. And so that's the biggest concern. We'll learn a lot about our guys, but I feel very certain that we're going to play our guts out and play hard. And so I'm excited to see who we're going to be this season.
Gus Malzahn. Previewing Thursday's Boise State-UCF matchup down at the Bounce House in Orlando. Boise making the long trip down there. It's a lot of miles. I mean, once you get on the plane, you're in the air either an hour or 5 hours. Then you land, and it's an easy trip from the airport, but you're in the plane for 5 hours. But Boise State will be playing in Orlando on Thursday night. UCF, and Boise's a good program. Actually, Boise's a really good program. And I think they're going to have a good team this year. I think UCF's going to open a can on that whole conference. I think they got a decent enough core returning. I think they're better on the sidelines now. They got a buyout paid to them. UCF, the athletic department, received a buyout from another college and, in my opinion, actually upgraded a coach. Now, here's the weirdness, though, for me. There are multiple players who left Gus when he was the coach at Auburn, who now 2, 3, 4 years later, you know what? I actually do want to play for Gus Malzahn. And so they're heading to UCF. I think this is an opportunity for UCF to have a really, really big season. So, again, they open against Boise on Thursday night down yonder in Orlando. Dan will jump in a couple of minutes, but right now I'm going to wrap this up with a closing argument.
The King's Closing Arguments. Presented by the best closing attorneys in the business, Alexander Shannara and Associates.
I am dilemmatized again, drawing a line between the kid and the player. Mentioned earlier that Manny Diaz has announced Avante Williams is back in the program. Avante Williams is a redshirt freshman, five-star. He was a five-star recruit last season, got injured, didn't play at all, and then last month got himself dismissed from the program. Manny and whoever else has a vote at the U have now let Avante Williams back in the program, but, quote, he won't get to play in any of our first six games, and there are other things he has to do because we're serious about violence against women. What? Violence against women? In case you missed it, last month. According to arrest reports, Avante Williams, again, he is going to be a redshirt freshman now on the team. According to arrest reports, Avante Williams grabbed his girlfriend with her hair and threw her on the ground several times. She was taken to the hospital, allegedly suffered bruises, broken nails, etc. WPLG, TV9, I don't know what TV they are, but WPLG reported that his ex-girlfriend was 31 weeks pregnant, and Williams is the father of the child. Okay, it's now a month later, and part of why he is back on the team is because the charges have been dropped. Why were the charges dropped? It sounds pretty serious. 31 weeks pregnant, he's grabbing her by her hair and slamming her on the ground multiple times. She now says she's not a victim. Avante did not assault her, and it's the police who have made this into so much more than it was. When I say I am dilemmatized, Jeffrey Simmons was on video pounding on a girl. 6'5", 290-pound Jeffrey Simmons, standing up, pounding a girl who was already on the pavement, if that can somehow make it worse. He was then St. Jeffrey for 3 years at Mississippi State. Academics, as a player, as a campus citizen, as perfect as could be. Joe Mixon, same thing. Joe Mixon had the worst 5 seconds you can, and now it's like 9 years later, and that's something that he did when he was 18. When I say I am dilemmanized, it's about the worst only one time or the worst I just snapped moment you can have. What if it really is just one time? See, that's the big difference to me when the male acknowledges that his subhuman wrongdoing was wrong and does as much as he can, shy of a time machine, to make things right. Joe Mixon did that. Jeffrey Simmons did that. Avante Williams has not done that here. In fact, it appears to me, and I say it appears, I have no evidence, just what I've read. It appears to me that this case could be an example of the number one way that domestic violence charges get dismissed. The dude goes back to the female he's already beaten up and then intimidates her with the promise of more violence if she pursues this with the police. When that's the case, she always believes him, if you can guess why. That is my opinion of what could have happened here, because now it's a month later and the now 35-week pregnant girlfriend is saying, oh, no, he never hit me. It was all just the police making more of this than they should have. So, yeah, I am dilemmanized because Manny Diaz says, hey, there's no charges. He's back on the team. But he can't play in the first half of the season, as if an amount of games is somehow an equal to allegedly at one point assaulting your 31-week pregnant girlfriend. So that's what's going on with Manny and Avante Williams. And the only way we will know how this turns out is when we know how this turns out, like 3, 4, 5 years down the road. So that's what's going on with a former 5-star recruit, number one recruit at his position in America. What up, Dan?
You know, we did the high school thing yesterday, and I'm going to kind of do it again today because I'm not going to do the Twitter thing with the Bishop Sycamore Twitter.
Yeah.
Let me actually just go ahead and run people through what I'm talking about right there. Twitter is a place that has a bunch of people who think that they're originally funny but are not smart enough or original enough to be able to come up with their own content to be funny. So they glom onto everybody else's memes or their GIFs or whatever it is, and they just really just kind of recycle the joke over and over again. So that's what I'm going to stay away from. But where I'm going to is, I think most of us have seen the video now. If you haven't, just probably Google Trent Dilfer, and you will see him getting into it with one of his players on the sidelines. Which
Dilfer is the head coach in Nashville, a high school coach in Nashville.
Yes, at Lipscomb Academy, which is basically becoming almost like an IMG or any, like, a kind of, what was it, Oak Hill for basketball?
Yeah.
DeMatha. Well, actually, DeMatha, I think, is known.
In the area most of the times.
Point being is that it's one of those schools that's known for having a lot of talent. Well, just to kind of give you a play-by-play of what happened, he has the player where you've done defensive and offensive line drills before. You know how for shedding they tell you to get your hands inside their pads? That's what he kind of did, is he had his hands inside the player's pads and was in his face yelling at him, you know, really as kind of a, you calm down, you calm down.
Yeah, this was during a game last week, and he locks up and he kind of drives the kid back towards the bench a little bit. And it was on video, and the video got out, and so now it is – now, again, there are times when the Twitter mob comes for you.
Yes.
When there should be some sort of reaction, but in this case, in my opinion, it was the Twitter mob. I thought it was a bit much.
Well, I think that if nothing else, it also is the benefit of the doubt for people that we believe. I think for the most part, Trent Dilfer is known as being a good guy. I mean, he runs the Elite 11, has been known
not
as
sketchy
somebody
in the least.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So it's one of those things that it's nowhere even close in my visit with you am I going to suggest he lose his job. He shouldn't do that. I just think that it was kind of a bad look for what today is. Because
sure.
I think the overarching lesson of what it is you also have the people who are my age in their mid-30s and up, which probably I would say, Chuck, my age group was the last one that really had the we're going to run you until your eyeballs fall out, had a coach who used to tell us that. You're going to do bear crawls, all this kind of stuff. All of the punishment
proof
that really
it
made you realize, hey, this is serious. We do not need to step out of line again. If we do, this is what happens to us. You can't do any of that stuff anymore. At least you can't do it up to a certain point. And that's where really, I think, if nothing else, the lesson here needs to be learn the lessons from the past. I always love, like, when people, whenever there's an injury, oh, he should put some tape on it. He should do all this. He should do all these different types of things. Exactly. The mental health issue, I think, is the most interesting one of all. Oh, well, you know, you play through it. You tough it out. You don't know what they're going through. You don't know exactly the issues that they're having that's keeping them from feeling like they can be their best on the field. And the other part of it as well is, well, you know, Johnny Unitas and all these guys did it this way back in the day. I'm not saying Johnny Unitas in this scenario, but Chuck, think about the amount of players in the NFL back in the 70s and 80s and even before that who then developed issues off the field after their playing career was done because it was so much stuff that they kept inside that eventually erupted out because they quote-unquote toughed it out. And not only that, I'll give you a good example injury-wise of why you don't compare yourself to players of the past. I used to cover the Rockets, and Kevin McHale was the coach of the Rockets at the time. The poster child of the old-school basketball player who quote-unquote toughed it out, where he couldn't even walk without a limp on a daily basis. His left shoulder, Chuck.
Oh, he looks like he's put together with spare parts.
He looks like Frankenstein's monster. He really does. Where his left shoulder was up near the middle of his ear, where he was so banged up and so beat up that I don't even want to imagine what it's like for him getting out of bed every single morning. So the point is, you can't treat today's kids like you were treated or like they treated the people before you on the football field. It just doesn't work that way anymore. Number one, the people doing it will not have a job anymore. And number two, the kids immediately, most of them for the most part, will shut down and you're not going to get anything out of them.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the video. I saw it maybe Sunday whenever it happened. I don't know exactly when it happened. I think I saw it Sunday. And I thought, here's my reaction. You can go find it and you can watch it and decide for yourself. I'm going to tell you my opinion of it was, oh, wow, he shouldn't have done that. And he's probably going to have to apologize to the kid, and he may have to talk to the parents. He's the head coach, isn't he? So I know that most high school programs, at least for the Booster Club, you'll have a film meeting at some point, review the film and all that. So I said, he's going to have something that he has to address here, and that's just a bad look. And then I went on to, like, the next 150 things that were more important than that. It was a tight end, which means he's going to be a bigger kid, and it's just context. It's the son of a former NFL player, which, again, just context. He was dressed head to toe in football equipment. And all Trent Dilfer did was lock up on his breastplate of the pads and yell at him. Now, I wouldn't do that today. And I can think back, and this ain't about me in the least, but I never really communicated that way when I coached. I coached defensive line, and those guys are just animals. And so I never thought that I was going to get across very much that way. But you were said you were in the last group. I was smack dab in the middle of the group for about 80 years of you proved your toughness by not drinking water in Georgia in August at 3-a-days because we had a special teams practice in the middle of the day. We had the 8 a.m. when you had dew on the field. We had a special teams practice at noon, and then we had a practice in the afternoon, and then I walked home uphill both ways. That was football in the 80s. I told you, coach used to walk around with a chin strap. And if you had a false start, he'd just ding you with the chin strap. It's the bells of St. Mary in your ears. When you're wearing a football helmet and somebody dings you with that little metal bracket, you can't do that anymore. And here's the thing. It shouldn't have happened to me. It shouldn't have happened that I had to prove how tough. You know what I used to do walking out to every practice? I was a freshman playing at Central Gwinnett. I saw the seniors do it, so I did it. Big plastic tub of these pink pills. Do you know what they were? Salt tablets. Big handful of salt, and then no water for 2.5 hours in Georgia heat in August. Yeah, that was smart. Got to prove how tough you are. All right, wraps it up on a Tuesday. Give me 22 hours, folks. I'll be back tomorrow. Talking more college football right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air. deep center field and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.